Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. Hold it now.
America comes to you on Tuesday evenings from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m., and my name is Kenny Jones. On Saturdays, we have Provocative Thought with Carlton Sneed, who touches on several topics concerning the African-American community. And he airs 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. at all times, Eastern Standard Time. Also, we have a partnership program. Now, all you people on social media talk about pro-black this, we need our own economics and whatnot. We could start by doing this, partnering with We Talk Production, marketing, advertising, and make your product and services go national and international. Now, we had a rough week again in the United States of America. Another woman was beat up. Also, we're supposed to be boycotting Waffle House. How many of you are really boycotting, protesting? How many of you are really, really implementing pro-blackness? And what I mean by that, black schools, black businesses, supporting your black politicians. I don't even know why we got to be involved with politics, but there are many segment of our population that we got to be involved in politics. But that's another discussion. We might discuss it tonight. So we really got, if we're really serious about our economics, We have, I don't care if we have to drive or walk blocks out the way or a mile out the way to do business with a black-owned businesses. I think that it is our duty to do this. And we have to be more, we just can't talk about it no more. We really have to implement it. And on the line, I have a gentleman that is doing what I'm talking about. He's implementing what I'm talking about. He has a learning center in Harlem, you know, and his name, I hope I can get the name right, Haji Tahima. Welcome, brother, to Black Earth America.
Peace, hello, my brother. Thank you, sir.
Can you pronounce your first name for me?
Yes, my name is Ajay.
Ajay. Okay, Ajay. All right, I have. Well, Ajay, can you tell some of our listeners and people that go download the program about what you do and what your purpose and what your mission of this of the Harlem Learning Center?
Okay, I'm a Harlem educator, author, and activist. And the organization that you're referring to is Harlem Liberation School, which we started 2 years ago. And it's basically a community organization that provides political black political education for our people. And our motto is helping black people wake up, clean up, and stand up. Now, we take that from our brother Malcolm X. And so if you break down those three terms, wake up is referring to creating black consciousness amongst our people, who we are, where we come from. Cleaning up is identifying our self-defeating behavior and thinking, or the things that get in our own way that we do that sabotage our greatness. And stand up is teaching our people how to challenge oppressive fates, and also how to build the institutions, organizations, resistance movements that we need to be liberated.
Okay. Let me ask you something. You know, a lot of millennials feel, and I could be wrong, feel that, hey, you know, I just want to get out here and do my thing and prosper and make money, and I don't have time for all this. I mean, there's a large percentage, Generation X too, and the baby boomers, my generation. One person told me we're so assimilated, it would be difficult for black folks to work together, such as black Republicans working with black Muslims, black revolutionaries working with black Democrats. And do you think that that could be an objective, getting blacks from all type of backgrounds and schools of thinking to work together to save our neighborhoods?
Well, I do believe in the principle of black solidarity. However, I think I need to give that a little bit of nuance, because I think that we confuse the concept of black solidarity, which is a practical concept, with the impractical concept of just all black people working together. That's not going to happen. However, black solidarity implies that myself as a black nationalist, a revolutionary, be able to see truth and beauty in some elements of our black Christian community. But we have to agree on some basic things. That means I can see truth and beauty and value in some of the black socialist community or even some of the black feminist community, different elements of our community. But it does not suggest that we work blindly with someone just because they're black. Because some people who are black collaborate with our enemies. Some people who are black sabotage progressive and liberation movements. So we can't work with just any black person, but certainly we should be able to work with different elements of black people in our community. So that I do agree with.
Well, let me, history shows that every black man is not a black man. You know, every black man's not down with the dressing issues in our community. So history shows us that. What do you feel were some of the issues that our community needs to find solutions for?
Okay. Anything that's causing pain to our people consistently is an issue we need to confront. So we can say the miseducation of our children in the public school system that our taxpaying dollars help to finance. And there are white teachers in these schools around the country hitting our children, calling our children out their name, refusing to teach black history, and participating in all numbers of egregious activities. We can talk about having curriculums that don't adequately prepare our children for solid academic or social education or career education for that matter. Students are going to school, getting suspended four times the rate of white kids, sometimes going off into prison, being arrested right in the school for the same violations that white kids are able to continue their schooling. Mass incarceration and increasing privatization of prison. 2 million black people in prison. Yes. And white judges being arrested because they're taking bribes from the corporations that run these privatized prisons, arresting black and brown people and forcing them to go to certain prisons. This is a fact. This is all a document. We also have, and then we have to think, 85% of the people who are going to prison didn't go to trial. They didn't have a trial. They were pressured and duped.
They plea bargained.
Pressured and duped into plea bargains.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then we have.
Even when they're innocent.
Yes, sir. And even if they're guilty, they're given exorbitant and unfair sentences and treatment. Then we have the housing situation. More and more black people being evicted from their homes being foreclosed, can't find affordable housing, their social services being stripped away, the ability to eat, have transportation, get to work and back. Unemployment is always double that of white people, and it's been this way for the past 60 years. So,
let me ask you this. There was a big press conference, and the president came out and said, this is what he said. Now, I'm going to quote because it's embedded in my brain. The unemployment rate is at an all-time low, 3.5%. I said, what about the black man? I think the black man's still in double figures.
our unemployment has always been just about double that of white for the past 60 years. This is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're not even going to get too deeply because we don't have enough time to talk about the rampant, egregious, chronic police misconduct, abuse, and murder of our people, many of whom are unarmed, are not guilty of any crime. And these officers kill us with impunity and are exonerated not 80% of the time, not 90%, but 100% of the time.
Right.
So we have a lot of issues we need to address, good brother. A whole lot.
How about the treatment by businesses? When we go in their business, we're being followed. We can't sit there. They call 911 as soon as we speak up for ourselves. That's it. You talk about Jim Crow has returned.
Well, Jim Crow's never left, if we're honest.
He's never left. You're right.
There's a president who's helped to facilitate a political climate where rampant racism and white race soldiers feel emboldened. People who may have silenced themselves and been undercover feel that they can come out and express their white supremacist views fully. And I wanted to speak to when we're talking about this problem, I want people listening to understand these are not disconnected. These are not sideline or incidental issues. These issues are part and parcel of the American social political fabric.
Right.
You can't intelligently talk about the United States of America without talking about enslavement, labor exploitation, crushing unions, imprisoning people, convict leasing, chain gangs, lynching. This is just as part of America as baseball and apple pie.
Right.
So
they
it's
still
important
do have
to understand that this is white supremacy. That white supremacy oppresses our people, according to Brother Neely Fuller, in nine areas of human activity. So whether we're talking about gender exploitation, class exploitation, or racial exploitation, that's all under the umbrella of white supremacy. And it has not diminished. It has not gone away. It has changed forms, transformed over time. And it has different faces, different names, but it's the same thing. The same thing that your great-great-grandfather fought against is what we're fighting against.
Right. What would you say to people? I had several people from different faiths, different backgrounds that came on the show, and with different theories, different views, different perceptions about the same issues that we're speaking about this evening. What would you say to an individual that said, well, we got to take responsibility for ourselves, you know, we always looking for a handout?
I would sigh. I would breathe deeply to help calm myself. And then I would proceed to tell them, oh, so you're one of those black people are their own worst enemy type. Then I would proceed to help them understand the difference between an enemy and a collaborator. I think that history proves beyond the shadow of any doubt, any dispute, that white supremacy and its agents, its policies, its laws, its corporations, collectively comprise the enemy of black people. Now, by that I mean these are the people that sat down and created a plan to destroy, subjugate, detain, monitor, and exploit us. Period. Now, we have some black people who have internalized some of the negative messages that we are nothing, have nothing, can be nothing. Black skin, a badge of inferiority. Black skin, a badge of shame and dishonor. Black skin, ugly and incorrigible. Some of us have internalized that.
Right.
Suffer from self-hatred. And so, yes, some of us are unwilling or unknowing collaborators of white supremacy. In other words, when Pookie decides he's going to sell crack or heroin, he's not doing that because he's like, I want to help destroy my community. I want to break up families and turn hardworking mothers into prostitutes. That's not what Pookie's thinking. Pookie has no education. He has no skill set. He feels like he has no viable option. But crack and heroin is conveniently placed all around him, as are guns. So we have to be clear when we say we're our own worst enemy. That is not true. We are, some of us are collaborators with our enemy. We help to facilitate our own destruction, but we don't come out here saying, I'm going to tell black jokes so I can destroy my community. I'm going to fight with brothers and sisters so I can help us be permanent slaves and be subjugated forever. We're victimized by internalized self-hatred. So those people I would completely dismiss and disregard. What they're saying sounds good to some, but it's actually not true. We have to give a sociological, historical framework to what we say. We can't speak out of anecdotal information or old wives' tales.
Right. And it's ironic that you bring up an example of Pookie. Is it ironic that they bring the drugs into this country, they distribute to our neighborhood, and their neighborhoods too, they really don't care who they are, our neighborhoods, then they create laws to imprison us for these crazy amount of years, which if it's compared to a white drug dealer, he gonna get less time. So it's ironic how that they set up a trap. Another example, the school system, not teaching marketable skills, teaching skills that are going to enhance and make them prosper. And when they graduate, then they back on the system. They blind to the system. So it's ironic how they say one thing in one way, but their actions speak of others.
Well, let's take the case that you mentioned of drugs. Back in 2007, I wrote a book for a famous Harlem drug kingpin. He told me the story, and I crafted it into a book for him. It's called Game Over, The Rise and Transformation of a Harlem Hustler.
Mm-hmm.
It's the memoir of Brother A.Z. Faison. Anyone that saw the film Paid in Full knows generally the story I'm talking about, because he wrote that
about
his life.
Right.
Now, he says to me very clearly that as he looks back on what he, Rich Porter, and Alpo did, that they were black pawns in a white street game. Black pawns on the chessboard. He looks back and he thinks about the fact that this crack that they sold, well, he sold cocaine. What it did was, just like the Wicked Witch of the West in the Wizard of Oz movie, she sent the characters through a poppy field to put them to sleep so they would not reach Emerald City. if you go to YouTube, check it out. She actually says, I'm going to send you through a poppy field and put you to sleep. Now, why does she say poppy field? Because poppy plants make heroin and opium. So what we are seeing, when we talk about drugs, we're talking again about a clear plan to destroy and to sedate and to retard an entire generation of people. This isn't new, and this didn't just happen with black people. The British who wanted to get the silk out of China and exploit China were unsuccessful because the Chinese were what we call a homogeneous nation. They just Chinese. They didn't allow outsiders. So what they did was they used opium, now known as the Opium Wars in China. You created a whole generation of drug addicts and were able to get their silk and force. So for people who think I'm making this up or it's bizarre, if you read the history, you'll see this is an age-old method that white folk have used to subjugate people.
Right.
But people have to understand it's not accidental. It is deliberate.
It's by design. I agree. It's by design. When we talk about independence, you know, people always talk about independence. Well, we're not free. You know, we have to become free. We got to be independent. You know, what will it take? Because we're not independent now, by all means. What will it take? And what type of independence?
Okay. Well, in my opinion, from my point of view, I think it's important to note that to a large degree, black people in the United States are free. But freedom and liberation are not the same. So, in other words, you can do this show. As long as you get whatever, pay whatever amount of money you need to pay, you can stay on as long as you want. And you can get in the car and drive and go places. Go to the movie where you want, when you want. If you're not in the prison, you might say you're free to some of you. However, the people you have to go to do the radio show don't look like you.
Right.
The people you go to buy that car don't look like you. The people you pay taxes to don't look like you. They set interest rates. You have no say in it. You have to comply to laws that you had no input in making, that you disagree with. And when you protest those laws being unfairly enforced against you, you get punished. But the people violating the law, like the police, go free. Eric Garner was choked out by five or six cops. He was unarmed and he posed no threat. He was backing up the whole time. Right? So they choke him to death. Know he's dead. Pretend like he's still alive and call the ambulance. Who got arrested?
Nobody.
One cop. Somebody did get arrested. The Latino brother that filmed the incident, he got arrested.
Okay.
That means we're not liberated. We are food. We go to the market. We don't grow the food. The medicines the doctors prescribe, we have nothing to do with making that. We're eating clone chickens and all types of meat. The FDA allows these people to sell us clone meat and not label it, so we don't even know what's real and what's not. So we're not liberated. Everything we need for survival, food, clothing, shelter, health care, education. All comes from people who despise our presence and see us as their eternal servant and lapdogs. So if you're not producing the things you need for your survival and development, you're not liberated. So my answer is the same answer that Malcolm had, that Kwame Ture had, that Assata Shakur had, and so many, a long line of nationalists and pan-Africans. We need to stop appealing to white people's moral consciousness. We need to stop trying to prove our humanity to people who see us as less than animals and treat us as such. And we need to do what is necessary to act and function as a sovereign nation. That's the answer for me.
So, do you feel that conscious black folks or black folks that are progressive, are you in the mindset that we need our own properties, our own land?
Well, my brother, if you reflect on what I just said, I said we need everything we need for our survival and development. We must produce. So that includes land. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Absolutely. And I want to also say, my brother, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. I thought you stopped.
But for people, for people listening, I want y'all to really understand me. A lot of people think what I'm talking is crazy and bizarre, but just, you don't have to be a rocket scientist, family. Listen, just check it out. Take a piece of paper and take a whole week and write down every place you go, everything you buy. And then at the end of the week, you'll have a list that will include supermarket, laundromat, cleaners, entertainment, medicine, pharmacies, all of these things, right? So what we're talking about is the capacity to provide all of that for yourself. You want to go to a hospital? We need to have our own medical clinic, hospitals, community patrols, agriculture, farms, distribution, trucking, shipping, everything. Everything we use right now that we don't own, we need to use it, but we need to own it.
Yeah. Other cultures do it. Other cultures are doing it.
Yes, sir. It's almost, to use a cliche, common sense. Really, when you see that you're dependent on people who just don't like you, they don't respect you, then you have to at some point say, you know what? It's hard to be independent. It takes more work and more planning. We got to get our money together. But it's going to be worth it in the end.
Right, and it's going to be some sacrifices too. There's going to be some sacrifice. Mm-hmm. We really have to sacrifice in order to have this, what you call, liberation. When you say clean up, and you talk about behaviors, what are some of the behaviors that we have to clean up in order to reach this goal?
Well, some of the behaviors would be saying things that are derogatory about ourselves and stereotypical. Well, the N-word is, in my opinion, one of these issues, but there's more that are, to me, more damaging.
Mm-hmm.
When someone gets in trouble with the law, before the Jews can even get to the brother, there's 100 black people in his own family and community that you got to get you a Jewish lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
That's damaging. Why? Because all those black people that went to law school thinking I'm going to help my community, What business do they get if we think they're not good if they're black? I need a Jewish lawyer. Or I need to get Colombian coffee. People don't know Africa produces tons and tons of coffee. People don't even think about it. You see, this is what I mean. There are things that we believe that get in the way of us being economically strong because we don't believe we have the capacity to produce goods and services at a high level like everybody else does. I mean, think about it, brother. You go to the supermarket. You like avocado. You go buy avocado. Do we ever think, do avocados grow in Brooklyn? In Bronx, in Harlem, in Detroit, in Virginia? No. But somebody grows them in another nation that exported here. Trucks or ships transport them to markets where they are then sold. So what we every time we buy fruits and vegetables that are not indigenous to this country. We're basically saying that we trust in other nations to produce the food we eat. Now, what if we were to start saying, let's identify the foods we like that come from Africa and parts of the African diaspora. Just that thinking alone would create economy. Just thinking like that. So when we tend to think black people can't organize, black people are always late. If you want to hide something from a brother, put it between the pages of the book. You see how all of that is damaging. It gets in the way of learning, educating ourselves, building business and institutions and infrastructure. So those would be some examples.
Well, I need to... how do you feel about the self-images and the self-perceptions and the thinking processes of our young people today, the millennials and the post-millennials?
Well, I just turned 50 last month, and I often think about that question. I do it within the framework of what was I doing when I was in my 20s? What were my concerns? You know, what were my aspirations? What were my activities? And what I find is radically different from the typical millennial today. But they were also atypical from the typical 20-year-old when I was in my 20s.
The baby boomers,
I think, were more my parents' generation after World War II.
No, baby boomers going from World War II to 1960.
Okay, well, I was 68.
Oh, okay.
But in any event, I think there's a temptation for middle-aged people like myself to look at the 20-somethings and say, man, they're backwards, the music is whack, their dance is whack, they have no culture, they're not motivated. There's a temptation for us to jump to those conclusions. But I'm going to say this. Even if all of those critiques of millennials are true, then we implicate ourselves in that because if my generation produced the golden era of hip hop where we had conscious hip hop, Big Daddy Kane and Rakim,
Public
Poor License Peaches and Brand Newbie and Public Enemy, and we had so much consciousness, why didn't we transmit
it to our kids? But they had their own conscious rap too. And they just say it differently. And I feel about the... And you know what? My perspective is... Excuse me for cutting you off. But my perspective is that they have to go through their development too. And the millennials, compared to when I was in my 20s, doing. They are very conscious, but they express it in a different manner. They give back to their communities when they make it big. They volunteer also. They mentor. They join different organizations. You may not agree with some of the organizations they join, but at least they are making attempts.
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's true. What I was saying, before you commented, was that to the degree that we critique the millennials, we critique ourselves because they would be my children's generation.
Mm-hmm.
So the question becomes, if you think they're backwards and wayward, what role did you, we, I play in that?
Yeah.
So there's kind of a cultural disconnect. And let's not forget, good brother, white supremacy. We're not operating in a vacuum. We're not just living our lives, you know, la-di-da, with no outside force. Those outside forces that were there when you and I were growing up are there for them too.
Yeah.
Except they hit us through maybe music and newspapers and TV. They hit them through internet and being able to get all types of access to information. They're culturally disconnected from the struggles of the 50s through the 70s. So they're coming to the game lacking political education. We go back. That's why Harlem Liberation School exists. We're trying to close that gap. We want young people to know. Y'all in all these colleges, everybody says, this guy got into 20 colleges. Well, God bless him. But he needs to know who sacrificed so that you can even apply to a university.
That's right.
So he needs to know about the Black Power movement, the Black Studies movement, all these students and community activists who demanded Black Studies departments, demanded that more Black people be admitted to these colleges. So that's what I mean.
But isn't the African American Studies Department, are they? I just want to say one thing about that. I was just looking at some catalogs a couple of years ago. A lot of these schools are not carrying this curriculum. Or you can't get a degree in it. You get a certification.
Yeah, well, most predominantly white universities that are four-year have some type of Black Studies, Afro-American, Africana studies department. What tends to happen is that a lot sometimes they don't have enough professors, or the professor is in a joint appointment, which means the sister is a psychology professor from the psychology department, but she also has an appointment in the African American Studies department. And cannot possibly be available to teach a full semester of classes that they would need to have a viable African American Studies department. They're also drastically underfunded. Underfunded and understaffed.
Okay. All right.
So
there will be times when you see. All right. Now I understand.
Yeah. So, you know,
and again,
I'm talking about white supremacy. I'm trying to bring us back. Everything we talk about is colored, shaped, impacted by this oppressive system of white supremacy.
You know what they'll call us, brother?
Who's they?
You know, the white supremacists. You know what they'll call us? Or the ones that control the institutions of America.
Uh-huh.
They will call us, it just skipped me. But it's the same as the white black supremacy. Let's just put it out there, black supremacy. You know, they will call us that. Oh, black, we're racist against them.
Oh, reverse racist?
Yes, we're racist against them. You know, everything that's negative in this country, we blame it on them. Well, who's in control of the institutions? Who in control of the criminal justice system? Who's in control of the educational system? Who's in control of the political system? There's only two parties. You know, I had one brother on last week that said we need our own party from the Mali movement. See, we need our own party on the local state levels in this country. Start with one state and just expand.
Yeah.
Why do we need to be involved in so much politics?
Well, let me just, I have to go back for the listeners. I really do. So pardon me. But we got to talk about the reverse racism piece. I want the brothers and sisters listening to be clear on tactics that our enemies use to confuse and divide us and sabotage our ability to think freely and move with power. So we got to talk about that. First of all, most of the working class black people I know, and even most of the so called middle class black people, professional class, none of them wants to be superior to anybody. They just want these police to get their foot off our neck, stop killing us.
Right.
They want to have exert power over their own lives. They want their children to be safe. And to receive an empowering education so they can be leaders and problem solvers for their own people. So that's not supremacy. That's talking about being empowered. The other thing is that the only way that black people are going to be reverse racist is if we start wholesale lynching white folks, wholesale killing white people. Wholesale depriving white people of living in affordable housing, rigging political systems so they have no representation or input, making sure they're starving to death, making sure that in schools they're learning that they're savages and monkeys and cannibals and primitive people that contributed nothing to the world. When we do that, then they may be able to have a claim that will reverse racism. In the meantime, that is nothing more than some BS propagandistic rhetoric to make black people feel ashamed of exerting power. And we should not go for that. That ain't nothing but a 52 fakeout.
Well, Brother Haji, I want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing some of that knowledge and wisdom for my audience. I'm surprised we didn't get a call in. I guess everybody's agreed with you. And I would like to invite you back a couple months from now because we touched on something that said we didn't have enough time for. But we're going to have enough time next time.
Sounds good to me, brother.
All right, brother. You have a good day. And thank you for coming on the show. All right.
No doubt. Thanks for reaching out. You take care.
All right now.
All right. Peace.
Peace. Wow. You know what? That brother right there is a very conscious brother, and but what we have to start really thinking about us. You know, we think we cannot live in this world without them. And you have to remember, we live for thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years of being independent, liberated people. And yes, we have to get back there. Because if we don't get back there, the results are what you're seeing today in our streets. And with that, as always, I am because we are because I am. Good night.
Hold it now!